ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
In the wake of the Bondi shooting, the federal and state governments look to toughen Australia's gun laws, with the Prime Minister announcing a gun buyback similar to that seen after the 1996 Port Arthur massacre. We'll have more on that shortly. And the rising cost of living has made moving to regional areas appealing, but that sea and tree change is making regional life more expensive, with some people choosing to move from one small town to an even smaller community just to be able to pay the bills.
The cost where we were in Toowoomba was getting out of control. Bills were out of control. We have 5 children to pay for. We just went, right, we've got to look at a different option here.
And we pedalled to Alice Springs, where a local youth bike program has been teaching youngsters how to ride, maintain and fix bikes and develop bonds beyond their own immediate community.
Often you see kids from different cultures don't always mix. And one of the best things that we've got to see is, you know, all these different kids from different backgrounds coming together, engaging, playing together, learning together.
I'm Alex Simon, and this is Australia Wide. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has announced a national gun buyback scheme, labelling it the largest such measure since John Howard initiated a similar plan in the wake of the Port Arthur massacre. The buyback initiative would be consistent with the 1996 approach and target surplus, newly banned and illegal firearms. This comes as the New South Wales government announced it will introduce the toughest gun laws in a generation. Australia-wide reporter Lisa Herbert has more.
Anthony Albanese said the government would introduce legislation to provide the funding for the gun buyback initiative and that the Commonwealth would split the cost with the states and territories on a 50-50 basis. The states and territories would also be responsible for the collection, processing and payment to people handing over their firearms under the Prime Minister's proposal. Mr. Albanese said there were more than 4 million guns in Australia, which is more than at the time of the Port Arthur massacre. Mr. Albanese says the Bondi terror attack shows we need to get more guns off our streets.
I'm also announcing that the government will establish a national gun buyback scheme to purchase surplus, newly banned and illegal firearms, the largest buyback since the Howard government initiated one in 1996. Australia's gun laws were last substantially reformed in the wake of the Port Arthur tragedy. The terrible events at Bondi show we need to get more guns off our streets. We know that one of these terrorists held a firearm licence and had 6 guns, in spite of living in the middle of Sydney suburbs there at Bonnyrigg. There's no reason why someone in that situation needed that many guns. There are now more than 4 million firearms in Australia, more than at the time of the Port Arthur massacre, nearly 30 years ago. The government will introduce legislation to support the funding of this buyback scheme and meet the costs on a 50-50 basis with states and territories. We expect hundreds of thousands of firearms will be collected and destroyed through this scheme. Consistent with the approach that was taken in 1996, the government is proposing that states and territories will be responsible for the collection, processing and payment to individuals for surrendered firearms. The Australian Federal Police will then be responsible for the destruction of these firearms.
Meanwhile, the New South Wales government has announced it will introduce the toughest gun laws in a generation to Parliament on Monday. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns addressing the media this morning.
The New South Wales government will introduce the toughest gun law reforms in the country. The government will introduce a bill to impose a cap of 4 firearms per individual, with strict exemptions for primary producers and sporting shooters.
Among the proposed gun laws for New South Wales is a requirement that residents of the state become a member of a gun club in order to own firearms. Here's New South Wales Police and Counter-Terrorism Minister Yasmin Catley.
We will be restricting access to high-risk weapons and components, including straight pull and button release firearms, magazine capacity, and limiting the number of firearms individuals can have. We'll be tightening licensing requirements with more frequent renewables and stronger identity checks, strengthening police powers by removing the NCAT loophole that can expose sensitive intelligence, we will increase the oversight of gun use, including mandatory gun club membership and strong storage inspections. Police already have the ability to suspend or revoke licences where there is a risk, but too often these decisions have been overturned. By removing NCAT on an appeal pathway, police will be able to rely on intelligence without fear of it being exposed. These changes give police greater confidence to act early and to act decisively.
Western Australia introduced new gun laws last year involving greater restrictions on who is able to legally own a firearm. As Australia looks to strengthen its gun laws in the wake of the Bondi terror attack, WA Police Minister Rhys Whitby says his state's new gun rules could provide a blueprint for the nation.
And it's no surprise that the nation is looking to Western Australia for assistance in ensuring that the country's gun laws, that every state's gun laws, are as safe as they possibly can be. So we'll look forward to working with New South Wales and then in turn the rest of the country in delivering the type of protections and safety that we have in Western Australia at a national level.
David LaFontaine is a farmer and competitive shooter from Balfour's Peak near Inverell in the New England region of New South Wales. He says existing laws already give powers to authorities to revoke gun licences and remove guns, and any new laws need strong consideration.
There are enormous options available for the authorities if the firearms licence holder is proven to be, there's a reason for that to be taken away. So I just think that they need to slow down, get some expert input, not only from the anti-gun lobby, but also from the other side of the debate, and make changes that are meaningful and not just a knee-jerk reaction.
The organisation representing Northern Territory's gun owners is cautioning against changes to firearm laws. The NT Firearms Council President, Grant Hatcher, says the NT's current laws are effective.
The Firearms Council is appalled at what happened at Bondi Beach. It was a horrible thing that should never have occurred. We just feel that at a very emotional time is not the time to make decisions that perhaps aren't going to be to the best benefit of everybody involved. So we're just calling for an approach to it where we're a bit calm. Get all the facts on the table. That's probably the biggest thing. And you've probably seen since Monday there's been more facts come out every day about the people involved in this and what's been going on obviously behind the scenes for a while. So until we know everything, how are we going to make the correct decision? So that's why the Firearms Council just feels that at the moment we need to find out exactly what's occurred, is there a way of curbing it? If we need to look at gun law reform, then put the right things in process to sort that out. Otherwise, we're not doing our job as people trying to do it properly. I mean, you look back at how many incidences have we had of issues. We've realistically had nothing. So you would have to say that from a historical point of view, yes, they're working.
Only last month, the Territory proposed to loosen its gun laws with an amendment introduced to Parliament to remove a 28-day waiting period for existing licence holders on purchasing a firearm similar to ones they already owned, specifically Category A or B firearms like basic rifles and shotguns, often used for pest control and hunting. At the time, avid hunter Bart Irwin said the change was positive.
The restriction came in on the second or subsequent firearms in the same categories that you already owned a firearm in. So if I owned a .22 rifle or a shotgun or a centerfire rifle, I had one of those already in a safe. I'd already had all the checks done on me, police checks for previous criminal histories, mental illness. All those things were done and I was permitted to have one of these firearms. I was trying to get another one for another reason. Let's say had one for a shotgun for waterfowling, shooting, hunting geese and ducks, and I wanted to buy a specialised one for shooting sporting clothes. Still just a shotgun. I had to wait 28 days to get it. And there was no public safety aspect to it. It was just red tape bureaucracy. And I believe it was designed to make the life of a law-abiding firearm owner more difficult than it really should be.
Meantime, in South Australia, Mario Nichols farms outside Ceduna and says there's some things that politicians need to know about how those on the land use guns before making any big decisions.
I've had a gun licence since I was 15. I'm 60 on Saturday, so I've had a gun licence for 45 years, and I'm a little bit concerned that we, legal gun owners, are going to become the scapegoat now for what's happened in Sydney. A farmer or a professional shooter, being a fox shooter, a goat shooter, a kangaroo shooter, needs a multitude of different types of guns for the different tasks that you need to do with guns. I guess in capital cities where someone who wants to get a gun probably should have a valid reason to have one. And I've actually thought that maybe if anything needs to be changed in gun laws, they need to go back and probably look at existing gun owners in the last 10 years, and ask them, or do an audit on people and ask them why they've actually got a gun.
Vice Chair of Gun Control Australia, Roland Brown, has welcomed the gun law changes announced by both the New South Wales and the federal governments.
It's an excellent initiative and we applaud it. We see that it's an important initiative to reduce the number of guns in the Australian community, and the buyback initiative, we are told, is to buy back those guns that are going to be moved from one category B into category C and therefore not available to a lot of people. Unwanted guns that people want to hand in after this kind of incident, and also other guns that are just surrendered. So it's a great initiative.
That's Vice Chair of Gun Control Australia, Roland Brown, ending that report from Lisa Herbert.
ABC Australia Wide.
And you are with me, Alex Hyman. It's great to have your company here on Australia Wide. To other news now. As Australian homeowners continue to feel the pinch of the rising cost of living, moving to regional areas has never looked more appealing. But as Vanessa Jarrett reports, regional life is getting more expensive, with some people choosing to move from one small community to an even smaller town just to be able to pay the bills.
Kate Bellini and her family thought they were getting ahead when they bought a home on the outskirts of Toowoomba on Queensland's Darling Downs 5 years ago. All was going well, but the bills started to rack up.
We got our mortgage just after COVID, so we had a really, really low interest rate and we were locked in for 5 years. That went from 2.79% to 6.3%, I think it was. So that made a massive difference to the cost of our mortgage repayment every week. The cost where we were in Toowoomba was getting out of control. Bills were out of control. We have 5 children to pay for.
She said with the fuel costs of driving back and forth into the city for activities and sports, feeding 5 children and rising power bills, cost of living became out of reach.
We just went, right, we've got to look at a different option here.
To get ahead, the Bellinis decided it was time to leave one regional area and move to an even more regional area in search of a more affordable life. They settled on Blackwater in the Central Highlands, 2 hours west of Rockhampton.
So we figured, why not move up here where we can earn, I think, probably between us another $100,000 a year, and our mortgage is half what it was.
Rising mortgage costs are highlighted in a recent report by property firm PropTrack. Senior economist Angus Moore is the author of the Housing Affordability Report.
Queensland's now slipped to being the third least affordable state in Australia and is now less affordable than the national average overall, with only New South Wales and South Australia even less affordable than Queensland. That's a pretty big turnaround from in recent years. It was actually the second most affordable state as recently as a couple years ago. While we did see some improvements in other states, that wasn't the case for Queensland. And to kind of underscore just how challenging housing affordability is in Queensland, typical income household, which is about $115,000 a year for Queensland, could afford to buy just 14% of homes that were sold in the state in the past year. And that's down from an already very low 18% last year.
While the Bellinis decided to lower their costs by moving to a small community, Mr. Moore said further regional migration would put pressure on prices outside the city.
One of the sort of unfortunate consequences is we've actually been seeing faster price growth for those more affordable properties over the past year or so. And that means that housing affordability for lower and middle income households has actually been worsening faster than it has for higher income households.
The median price for a home in Toowoomba is $730,000. While in comparison, the median sale price in Blackwater is $262,500, keeping in mind it is a smaller market with just 131 sales in the past 12 months.
For us, finding a property to fit our family was the issue. We needed a five-bedroom house. We ended up buying one for $455,000, so it's obviously a lot more than your median price, but it is also fully renovated, six or seven air conditioners. It's a nice house. So it was hard to find one. It was kind of like every time we found one, it was already under offer. Once we found one, we grabbed hold of it.
At first, Kate's extended family were apprehensive of the family moving away, but so far it's worked out well.
It's great. It's great. I really like it. It's a really nice community vibe. Everything's nice and close. Everybody's very friendly. I like literally look at it in a way that, you know, we've got a supermarket, we've got access to online shopping, we've got a gym, we've got a pool. There are some facilities in town. I really don't see anything wrong with it, but I think it really just depends what you're looking for. In terms of family living, it's fantastic. There's lots of young families here and everyone's trying to do the same thing, really, just kind of beat that cost of living.
Vanessa Jarrett with that story. Christmas can be a tough time for many people, but a group that might not always automatically come to mind is disadvantaged youth, kids living on the streets because it's not safe for them to be at home. A Gosford-based charity, Musicians Making a Difference, has been supporting disadvantaged young people for more than a decade. Central Coast reporter Sarah Forster was there for a very special reunion when a group of young adults who were supported as disadvantaged teenagers came together to record a Christmas carol.
In a small recording studio in Gosford, seven young locals who survived childhood homelessness, violence and trauma are rewriting Christmas. People like Leon, born in state care, using drugs by age 12, homeless at 17.
I was in a very tricky place a few years ago, and Mad came here and gave me this sense of belonging, and that belonging kind of turned into a harmony through music and using things, avenues that I enjoy, and then that turned into friendships, places that I could lean on, and then now here I am working with a group of people who are talented and have tricky pasts. I was in a group home and I was helping a friend of mine who was my family, and as I was going to go and help him, he caused a bit of racket and he was going to go and fight this guy that lived in a group home. And what happened from there is I knew he couldn't fight, so I wanted to protect him as I wish someone protected for me. And a knife got pulled and it got put into my artery and sliced my artery, and that was that situation. I was in a coma with that one as well and somehow survived. 6 months later, I got hit by a four-wheel drive after I left school to go and help some friends out again, helping other people. And from that, I got hit by a car, had no helmet on. I think I flew 25 metres or something like that, hit my head, went to a coma. 2 weeks in a coma, wasn't meant to pull out of it, and I did. Got told I wouldn't be able to walk and talk.
Despite a lifetime of struggle, Leon has found family with Musicians Making a Difference.
A lot of people here resonate with that feeling of what they were longing for when they were younger. Knowing that that song came from all of us, different people with different stories, and coming together to harmonise, to create a song, is just unreal, having the opportunity to do that. And I think that it's hope. That's the key point, the feeling that I can feel is the energy of hope. And knowing that we've got each other.
For 18-year-old AJ, a Christmas filled with love is something he would never have even dared to dream of.
I was in a bit of a tight situation. I was homeless. I was a drug addict. And I was also a criminal. If I'm being completely honest with you, I never really had hopes for anything past the age of 16. I didn't think I'd be here past the age of 16.
It was an emotional reunion for Nico, who returned to the Musicians Making a Difference studio for the first time in almost a decade.
I was living in a refuge. My father was dying of cancer as well.
He recalls what life was like.
I used to come into Mad like every day because I wanted to stay out of trouble. And the thing was, there were kids that would try to get me to break. It wasn't like going, even committing a crime, but I'd be in a refuge and I'd have people that are in there that will try and provoke you, so that way you would lose your housing situation there. So my escape was always coming into Mad and just seeing what I could do inside Mad.
After accessing the support he needed to turn his life around, AJ has high hopes for the future.
My Christmases now are a lot different because I have a family here at MAD. Now, I've also got an incredible partner who I live with and who I spend every day with. And this will be our first Christmas together. It was my dream. It still is my dream to have my own family and be able to provide and care for them. And having this Christmas with her, it really means a lot. It's a very pivotal moment in my life.
That story from Central Coast reporter Sarah Forster. And the song was recorded as a fundraiser for Musicians Making a Difference, or MAD, as part of their Sounds Like Home campaign. And here is a little bit of the finished product from that recording session.
Silent night,
silent night,
holy night,
holy night,
shepherds quay,
shepherds quay,
at the side.
That Silent Night, performed by the Unbroken Carolers, and that story was from Sarah Forster on the Central Coast. For 4 years, a local youth bike program in Alice Springs has been teaching young children how to ride, maintain and fix bikes. It's all part of a youth outreach program that wants to help young people build positive relationships, teach safety and have some fun. Our reporter Christopher Murakarani Fitzpatrick went along in the hot desert sun to see how it all works.
A spanner turns, a chain clicks into place, and a line of kids roll out in helmets. In Alice Springs, Bikes Mudder is giving young people somewhere to be after school and a way to build confidence on two wheels.
Bikes Mudder is a program that I came up with just for the kids. I just thought I'd come up with a bikes program because it was something I grew up with, and I just never really seen any other program like the program that I grew up with.
Founder and local Arunda man Tyrone Langton says Bikes Mudder was inspired by a program he loved growing up, and he wanted kids now to have something similar.
And a program I grew up with was called Deadly Treadleys. It just sort of made me look forward to going to that program all the time because it was just people that I was helping kids out all the time.
Tyrone says as an Aboriginal man, he grew up facing discrimination. He remembers once as a young boy riding on a bike that was a treasured gift from his grandmother when a stranger accused him of stealing his bike. He didn't want children who are growing up hard in Alice Springs to face the same discrimination.
I just felt like that kids nowadays just never really have their own bikes. Like I said, most kids all are just don't know how to ask for things, you know, and we could let them know, like, do you have a bike? We'll give you a bike. Just come to the program and, you know, just have fun. Yeah, a lot of the kids actually came here not knowing how to ride bikes, and then, like, they just got stronger and stronger just from this program.
One of the people helping run it now is Darnell McDonald, who first turned up as a kid, then stuck around and started learning the tools.
My name's Darnell. I'm just helping kids fix their bikes and, yeah, help them, yeah, make them have fun and all that joy.
He says Bikes Mudder became a place to hang out, and before long, he had his own bike and a new direction.
Ran that Pinto school and I see Bike Mudder hanging out, so I just went hang out and see what they was doing and I asked them, and got my first mountain bike. So
Tyrone says it didn't take long before staff noticed Darnell wasn't just participating, he was teaching.
We noticed him coming to Bikes Mudder all the time. That's when we noticed him teaching other kids how to do stuff in it. And then he just ended up picking up a spanner with Nate and then just started just getting through all the bikes, fixing stuff, watching them grow and getting real good at doing what they do.
These days, Darnell's into mountain biking, and he reckons the best part is keeping kids rolling and keeping it fun.
I like mountain biking, so I just like ride around, do like some tricks and just go mountain biking. So yeah, it's really fun, and fixing bikes is really good, like fixing.
The program runs with the support of the Larapinta Child and Family Centre, and staff there say the impact goes beyond bikes.
My name's Cassie Boyle from the Larapinta Child and Family Centre. It's basically for, you know, kids having things to do after school and having positive role models. you know, we talk about Darnell, who's a worker in there, as one of our real big success stories because he started as a participant. And now to see him working and finding a career path within it, it's been a real big success feeling for all of us.
And Cassie says one of the biggest changes they've seen is kids mixing more across backgrounds because they're all working on something together.
Often you see kids from different cultures don't always mix. And one of the best things that we've got to see is, you know, all these different kids from different backgrounds coming together, engaging, playing together, learning together. I hope Bikes Mutter just kind of continues to be what it is and provides what it does for our kids out here in Lairapina, for kids, you know, wherever they go.
That story from Alice Springs reporter Chris Murakarani Fitzpatrick. And finally here on Australia Wide. Nestled in a performance space at a Gold Coast sports hub is a group of young people with differing abilities who love to sing, dance and act. The project is the vision of local music teacher Hannah Edwards, who has created a safe space for this group of people who love to perform. Our reporter Nicole Dyer went along.
It looks like Oscar is reading a story, The Grinch, and the rest of the team are acting it out. Well, can we watch you for a minute?
And the Grinch grabbed the tree. He started to shove. And his head sound a small sound. He turned around fast and saw a small who. The little Cindy Lou Who.
So it was literally about me spreading joy. I like to have fun. I like to give the kids a safe space, and they're young adults, they're not just kids, a safe space to express themselves, to gain friends and make like lifelong friendships, create something that I didn't see out there. I see a lot of support services with not as much heart as I felt there should be.
Well, seriously, when I walked in, you could have been one of the members of the Wiggles because you've got this beautiful bright orange hair and you've got the flowers in the hair. And so obviously you're bringing that colourful, be yourself, express yourself kind of vibe. Now, we're sitting outside a very busy room at the moment.
We're more focused on theatre today. Sarah, do you love singing or dancing or acting the most?
Singing.
Yes. Now, Kaim, were you the Grinch?
Yes.
Do you get nervous when you get up in front of other people?
No.
What do you love the most about being here?
Dancing.
Do you have a move?
Yes.
Oh, he's doing the spring club. Hey, don't steal that. That's my move on the dance floor. Hello, Isaac. Nice to meet you. So are you a dancer? Are you a singer? Are you like a triple threat? What are we talking here?
Isaac is our local Elvis enthusiast, impersonator, everything like that. Isaac's actually a beautiful piano player.
Wow. And do you get nervous when you play in front of people?
Oh, I play everyone. I feel all the family come and watch me play piano.
I don't do this on my own anymore. I have amazing people around me. So Miss Hope is one of my beautiful staff that I'm with all of the time.
It's really the best job in the world. I'm so blessed. It's like a family. Everyone's just so joyful and every day is different, but just so much warmth, and seeing them perform just brings a tear to my eye every single time. It's just so beautiful.
And Hannah, the thing is, we're talking about performance, and I can tell that a lot of your performers are not shy about performing in front of other people. Recently, you did a very special carols evening.
We were so chuffed. We got to do 15 minutes. The kids got to do different dances. We did a sign language song. We just really wanted to be inclusive. Because obviously we do have quite a few members who have trouble verbally, so we wanted to make sure that they were able to perform and sing in their way. It was beautiful. We were all crying and trying to run the performance at the same time because it was a huge crowd. We've never gotten that big of a crowd. You know, our team have never gotten to do that. So that was really, really cool.
Hello, Spans. Did you have a job before this job, or were you in teaching, or what's your background?
My previous job, I was a house dad. I used to do it for NRL clubs. So I was with the Warriors, the Roosters. And I used to look after, but they were professional athletes. I used to look after the players. Caring's caring, the way I look at it. Like, caring's caring. It's like, you know, love is love. Like, I'm blessed. So.
What do these young performers teach you?
They teach me lots. They teach me lots. Teach me the big stuff and the little stuff doesn't matter. There's a bigger picture to everything, and don't sweat the small stuff. It's just about getting out, having fun, enjoying it with your mates, and that's the biggest thing I've taken away from this job.
All right, we're going to do it again. You ready?
Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's Hannah Edwards and her Heartspace team and performers. And that story came from our reporter, Nicole Dyer. And that's Australia-wide for 2025. A big thank you to you for listening to the program and to all the ABC reporters who have contributed their stories from across the country. Sinead Mangan, Alex Barwick and I will be back again next year, and we look forward to your company then. I'm Alex Hyman. Have a safe and very happy Christmas and New Year. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.